Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
A new administration moves into the White House tomorrow. What does the new president need to know about Texas? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We pride ourselves in the Lone Star State on being our own thing, a part of the United States and an entity unto ourselves at the same time. According to the International Business Times, on its own, Texas would boast the world's 12th largest economy, ahead of Australia and South Korea. Oil and gas, agriculture, banking, and tourism are big, important industries eager for an educated workforce. But we rank 43rd in the nation compared to other states in Education Week's assessment of academic standards. Our poverty rate is falling in Texas, but it was still over 17% as of 2014 census figures. Does President-elect Trump understand how Texas fits into the big picture of this country that we Americans have elected him to run? And what else would you like him to know? We'd love to hear your thoughts throughout this hour at 1-800-933-5372. And we've also invited two guests to weigh in. O. Ricardo Pimentel is a columnist for the San Antonio Express News. He joins us this hour from the studios of Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. William McKenzie is editorial director for the George W. Bush Institute and editor of its journal, The Catalyst. And he's here in studio with me at KERA. Our conversation is part of What Texans Want the New President to Know, is part of our NPR's A Nation Engaged project and our participation in it. Gentlemen, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
I want to start by talking about the president-elect's plan for a border wall. I don't have information for California, New Mexico, and Arizona, but the majority of Texans who participated in a nonpartisan Texas Lyceum poll last fall opposed the construction of a border wall. Ricardo, we'll start with you. Do you think Mr. Trump is aware of this opinion in Texas?
I think he's well aware of the opinion generally that the border wall is unnecessary, that the border is already among the most secure in the world. And I'm pretty sure he probably knows that that net migration from Mexico, the country he seems to be most concerned about, is at net zero, according to the Pew Research Center. I think he's aware of it, but I think his intentions are clear.
It might have been that same Pew study, Bill, that found that the majority of Americans overall oppose a wall. But this falls apart when you separate by partisan affiliation. 63% of Republicans support a wall. 84% of Democrats oppose a wall. Is it reasonable that any president pays attention to what his or someday her party prefers?
Well, certainly, I mean, they have to listen to, you know, what their base may be and what their base may be saying. On the other hand, they are leader of the entire country, and so they have to lead the country in addition to representing their party, and that's an age-old tension. You know, in terms of the border security issue, I think there are a couple ways to look at it. I mean, there's the wall, but there's also the larger issue of border security. And I think everybody can agree a great power like the U.S. has the right to enforce its borders. I think probably most people would agree with that. So the question is, how do you best do that? I mean, is a wall really what you want, or is it other things? That, you know, I would defer to experts what those may be, whether they're the drones or, you know, other technologies. And that's kind of where the debate kind of falls down, I think.
I'll defer to you gentlemen as Texans. I'm a Texan, too. But right. It seems to me that most Texans do not believe that Mexico will pay for this. Any thoughts?
I think that's pretty clear. Mexico has made that fairly clear, well, abundantly clear. Yeah, I think that's right.
All right. I agree. I think Mexico's made abundantly clear for our journal, The Catalyst. I was down there back in April and doing an interview, and it was pretty clear there that wasn't something they were rushing to pay for.
Back to that Lyceum poll, which, as I mentioned, was conducted in September. Things may have changed. But 54% of Texans said immigration hurts the U.S. more than it helps, despite the fact that, you know, we have the nation's second largest population of undocumented immigrants, an estimated 1.5 million people, according to the Migration Policy Institute. Thoughts there that might relate to the president-elect?
Well, Texas has a couple industries, hospitality and agriculture, that depend heavily on immigrant labor. I think it's problematic if we clamp down on undocumented immigrants already here or those coming, what it will do to those two industries. And I think Mr. Trump should know that about Texas.
So most studies show that there's a net plus to immigration. And a net plus means there are costs, and nobody should deny that there are costs and there are challenges. But there is a net plus. And you also look at a state like Texas, which the demographers are really clear about, that we have two phenomena going on. One is we have an aging Anglo population, and at the same time, we have a much younger Latino population. And I'm not saying all of that younger Latino population is directly related to immigration, but clearly part of it may be. And so our future is tied up with young Latino families as they mature and grow. And as you said at the outset, you know, we have issues dealing with education that we need to make sure that our schools are going to be having the right strategies. They're going to make sure those young Latino students are going to be able to be part of the mainstream of Texas and lead Texas, either becoming our political leaders, our innovators, our scientists, our teachers, our policemen, all that.
We are speaking this hour about what Texans want the incoming President Donald J. Trump to understand about this state. And we are most interested in hearing from you, the people of Texas. If you'd like to join our conversation, we have lines open now at 1-800-933-5372. You can talk about anything we've brought up so far or something that is on your mind. You can also get to us via Twitter at KERAThink, or you can email think@kera.org. Texas is a state that tends to elect Republican leaders to statewide and national offices, at least for the past several decades. Donald Trump ran as a Republican. Bill McKenzie, I'll put this one to you first with the George W. Bush Institute. How does Donald Trump fit or break the mold of the sort of Republican that Texans have preferred historically?
Right. Well, I think that's an evolving. The answer to that is probably evolving, and I think we will learn more starting tomorrow and what themes he addresses in his inaugural address. So at this point in Texas, we have a very active Tea Party. At the same time, we have had this longstanding kind of what I would call managerial political tradition in Texas. Joe Strauss, the Speaker of the House now, I think best reflects that. In years past, George H.W. Bush, a number of others were kind of in that. You know, they were conservatives who wanted to apply their values and principles to large public problems and figure out what are the best ways to solve those. And if that means in some cases you don't give up your principles, but you're compromising and working with Democrats like Bush did, George W. did as governor with a number of Democrats in the legislature, you're trying to find solutions to problems. And so What will President Trump be like, and will he be closer to a Tea Party philosophy and perhaps sometimes a Tea Party strategy, which doesn't really always lend itself to negotiation with Democrats? I don't know. I don't think any of us know quite yet. Some of his philosophy, if you look at infrastructure spending, you know, that's not really something that's been the calling card of Republicans in recent years. So maybe he will change the equation, the philosophical equation some. I don't think we know yet.
Ricardo?
I think that's absolutely right. I think we don't know. At the moment, there are those who have hitched their wagons to Trump and we're probably more Trump than Trump on border security. I'm thinking of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick at the moment. And there's a schism. I mean, there's Joe Strauss, who is, as Mr. McKenzie said, sort of fits a different mold, more managerial. So I think if President Trump proves to be as popular as he was when he got elected, although his approval ratings are fairly low at the moment. But if he still, his message still resonates 4 years from now, we will see Texas politicians falling in line because they want to win election. But if the mood sours on President Trump, then I think we will see some evolution of our politicians' feelings on the president.
So I would say, you know, what he campaigned hard on was nativism, protectionism, and isolationism. I think it's fair to say those kind of define part of Trumpism. And those three isms are not necessarily reflected, as we know, in mainstream Republicanism all the time. There are a lot of, you know, Republicans who were not at all comfortable with those three things. And this debate over globalization is kind of, I think, a good exemplar of this tension within the Republican Party, which I would also say is an issue that interestingly plays itself out in Texas in ways that maybe, you know, the new administration should look at, because we have both benefits from globalization and we also have challenges from it. He largely campaigned, if I read it correctly, on the downsides to globalization. But you look at, you know, we're, you know, a top exporting state. Our leading, we are the country we most export to is Mexico. 37% of all Texas exports go to Mexico. 10%, our second largest state country, go to Canada. Third, 4.5% go to China. So that's North America working together as a unit, those first two, and then China. And both of those are Mexico and China, as we know, were issues that he talked a lot about. So in a state like Texas, that doesn't necessarily equate rejecting globalization doesn't necessarily translate into a positive message.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Cindy calling from Austin. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Hi, I'm appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I'm driving, so I'm going to pull over and not break the law.
All right, be careful.
I would like to comment on the infamous wall. As a lifelong, or nearly lifelong, Texas resident, and senior citizen, I grew up going to Texas schools alongside undocumented Mexican children and was a waitress for a good number of years and worked alongside undocumented Mexican workers. And the comments I would hear on this wall during the Trump campaign with basically the lynch mob mentality, build the wall, just infuriated me. I felt like I was watching a lynch mob from back during the KKK days. I have never met anyone that identifies with the Trump description of immigrant. I have worked alongside, like I said, tons of Mexican families who work hard. I've worked among people who lived 10 and 20 in a house and sent every penny of very low pay back to support their families in Mexico. And I just wanted to call in today and say how deeply I feel about this wall idea. And if it does happen, I just really will be ashamed at my state for allowing anything as racist as a wall.
All right, Cindy, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. We have to take a quick break now. My guest this hour in our conversation with you and people around the state of Texas about what Texans want the president-elect to know about this state is taking place with two guests, O. Ricardo Pimentel, who is columnist for the San Antonio Express News, and William McKenzie, editorial director for the George W. Bush Institute. We'd like to hear what you would like the president-elect to understand about Texas. Call us at 1-800-933-5372. Email think at kera.org or find us on Twitter at KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. For our part of NPR's A Nation Engaged project today, we're looking ahead to the Trump presidency and asking your thoughts. We talked to people around Austin recently about what they want the president-elect to understand about Texas.
Alex Wisenhunt, here in Austin, Texas. I'm an inside sales trainer for Office Depot's business-to-business sales organization. Texas, I think right now, potentially more than any other state, is, you know, a melting pot of cultures, and that, you know, over the last 10, 20 years that we've evolved drastically into a very technological state, but also a state with a lot of different viewpoints and ideas, and I hope that those can be respected.
Mary Temple, Northwest Austin. I'm actually disabled. I'd like him to know that Obamacare is a good thing. There are far too many people out there without health insurance, even with Obamacare out there, and they shouldn't repeal Obamacare. They should figure out a way to enhance and make it better.
My name is Molly Lewis Freeman. I live in Cedar Park, which is a suburb of Austin. I would like for him to know that maybe he doesn't know us as well as he thinks he does, and that we are prepared to like him if he will just be likable.
I'm Blake Willman. I'm a Starbucks barista here at Target. I just want him to know, you know, what'll make us happy in the long run, what we'd like to have passed and not have passed, and basically that'll keep us from collapsing in on ourselves.
You are listening to Think. Those were people around Austin talking about what they would like the president-elect, Donald J. Trump, to understand about Texas. Ricardo Pimentel, I wonder if you agree that Texans are willing to like President-elect Trump, tomorrow President Trump, if he does what we need him to do.
Well, there's no doubt he's going to be a leader of a divided country. But I think folks are willing to give him a chance if he actually produces results. I think everyone's prayers and wishes for success will be with him. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of tolerance if President Trump behaves as candidate Trump or even as President-elect Trump has behaved. But I think there's going to be a willingness, a look, wait-and-see attitude to see if maybe the sky really isn't falling. At least that's my outlook.
Bill McKenzie, do you think that President-elect Trump, President Trump, can unite the people who really embrace, you didn't call it white nationalism, you called it
nativism,
protectionism, and
isolationism.
Can he unite those people with the people who don't think that's the way the country should go?
Well, I don't know. Fair question. And it would be very hard to unite people who have very different takes on this. The question, I think, maybe is finding ways that we can agree that this would be a smart strategy. So at the outset, you talked about education in Texas. So I think that is the sort of issue that I would love to see him emphasize, and education here in a broad sense. I mean, we need people who are trained for skills that will take them into jobs that are really driven by technologies. I'm fascinated. I visited a factory in Frisco last year, and they sell automated distribution systems and to organizations, entities, and even the government. And what they do is they have these, in this case, they had pills going down this conveyor line. And so it's not the old Lucille Ball, Vivian Vance, where they're taking the chocolates off of that, but it's all automated. The point is they're people managing the automation. So they're not on the line moving the pills around, but they're managing the automation. So we need people across the country who can manage the automation, manage the robots. And that's going to require, you know, workforce training, credentialing, things that maybe you'll get in some kind of post-secondary education, whether that's going to be community college or a technical school or a four-year school. That, I think, is the type of issue that we could perhaps see some common ground with people who are on different sides of this debate over globalization.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Renee in Dallas. Hi, Renee.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
My questions and comments are twofold. One is regarding DACA, and I kind of want to ask the speakers what they think the Trump administration is going to do on its first 100 days with those 900,000 students and young people.
Well, let me see if we can get an answer to that, because we got lots of people waiting to comment on the show. Gentlemen, thoughts on DACA?
Well, he has said he is going to overturn DACA, but his comments and comments for of his surrogates, for lack of a better word, is less harsh than that, that perhaps they will not be priorities for deportation. And I know that fear exists out there because essentially they're registered with the government. The government knows who they are and where they are. So the fear is real. But again, much of Trump's rhetoric, it's changing these days. He's been more conciliatory, and we'll just have to see if his policies match his previous rhetoric.
Well, and I hate to, like Ricardo, I hate to keep coming back to we'll see, but I really think that's about the only answer we have at this point, but because, as we know, he doesn't have a governing track record. So we only have to go on what he said, and Ricardo's right. He said two different things. I would go back to maybe one other way we can find some common ground, that which I mentioned at the outset, is finding strategies that will help young Latino students master their subjects largely integrate in larger American mainstream. You know, 28% of the country is projected to be Latino by 2050. So what are those strategies? Is that, what kind of dual language programs work best, for example? Those are sorts of issues that may not garner headlines, but are really important to dealing with this very serious domestic issue.
A Rice University study found that about a million Texans gained health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, although 3 million adults in the state remain uninsured. Can Texans feel confident that the repeal and replace efforts underway in Washington with the president-elect's blessing will be equivalent to or better than what newly insured folks have had under Obamacare? People who have Obamacare tend to like it, but most people agree that it is far from perfect.
Well, I think the doubts are valid about whether President Trump could replace, that his plan would cover as many Americans as the ACA does. But again, wait and see. He said last week that he's going to cover all Americans, yet his nominee to HHS said, he stressed access, which is not the same as coverage. So we'll just have to see what's in it when he rolls out his plan or when the GOP Congress rolls out their plan.
Well, and I would add, at the same time, we have to deal with the cost drivers, which are still, pretty significant, even under the Affordable Health Care Act. And part of the problem with the Affordable Health Care Act was it punted off until the later part of this decade, some other harder issues dealing with controlling cost. And so whatever we come up with, we're going to have to deal with the fact we see these premiums going up, and that we're going to see healthcare costs be a challenge,
All right, back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Jesse in Houston. Hi, Jesse.
Hi. I wanted to add to the comment you made earlier about Texas exports to Mexico and XYZ. Main trading partner of the state. So another form of exports that is significant that has existed for a number of years and that impacts favorably in this case is that of financial investments that have been carried out by Mexican institutional and private investors for decades now. That is another form of exports that is, again, a significant commercial or business tie with the state. I would add that inbound investment from Mexico in different sizes and from corporations with iconic names such as Cemex, one of the world's largest concrete and building materials entity headquartered in northern Mexico, and a significant number of people they employ in this country. A very important company, a very important expansion opportunity.
Well, Jesse, thank you so much. I really appreciate you bringing that up.
So along those lines, it was, you know, recall that our mayor, Mike Rawlings, and Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price went to Mexico in June of last year, I think, in part to sell Texas to Mexico and to sell Mexicans on Texas firms and to invest in firms. So the caller is right. I mean, this is a two-way street, and this is another reason why this globalization debate is falsely portrayed if it's globalization or no globalization. You know, it's how do you make globalism work for more people? Because if you try to do away with globalization, which I don't think you can, but if you could, you run the risk of people who are going to lose investments from Mexico and Texas, which help us.
We know San Antonio is a beneficiary of Mexican migration. Wealthy Mexican migration to our city. We recognize this in our visa process. We have a visa that allows immigrants to come in, invest in U.S. companies, start businesses, and hire Americans, and we allow them to stay. But this is a phenomenon that San Antonio is quite familiar with.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372. Let's quickly go to another call here from Houston. We have, I believe it's Anoth. Hi, Anoth.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is for regarding immigration and the wall. I came here from South America when I was 12, and I lived in Dallas and in Houston for my past 42 years, I guess you can say. I was raised here, and now I'm raising my sons who are 22 and 23. But anyway, to me, the wall is been called. It's not protected. It's not 100% secure, as one of your experts said. And Donald is not only building the wall just to keep Mexicans or illegal immigration out. We're not talking about just Mexico coming over the border. There's other nationalities, other people that come through the border.
Well, Anoth, thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it. And if you'd like to join her, you can call 1-800-933-5372. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're taking part today in NPR's A Nation Engaged project, asking Texans what they would like the president-elect, incoming President Donald Trump, to understand about this state of Texas. Let's go back to the phones now. We have Michael calling from Grand Prairie. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hello, ma'am. At this point, it's beating a dead horse, but I wanted to make a comment on the wall. In regards to how I was very surprised to see that Texan voters and conservative voters in general being so convinced about his pitch for the wall because it seemed like at the time there's no way that taxpayers wouldn't end up footing this bill, and that it wouldn't be a very good solution for this whole geopolitical problem of illegal immigration coming from South America, Central America, and everything. And I wanted to make the comment on how surprising it is to see so many Americans being convinced by such a pitch, which anyone could understand wasn't a good one.
So, Michael, if you could sit down with the president-elect, you would say you don't want the wall. Is that correct?
I wouldn't, because I don't think it solves any problems.
All right. Thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it. I want to switch gears here just a little bit. Gentlemen in the studio, Ricardo and Bill, many Texas voters, certainly not all by any means, but many take pride in their social values, some of which are driven by their religious beliefs. These can be parsed in different ways politically. There are people of faith who are Democrats. There are people of faith who are Republicans. How confident do you think these voters are that a President Trump will take actions that are compatible with their social and moral values? Ricardo, we'll start with you.
Well, I think he won, and he won among evangelicals. And so they're willing to roll the dice at the very least. that he will do what he says, but I don't think that he was elected because of his values. Those came under some heavy attack during the campaign. He won for other reasons. His appeal to make us great again. And I'm not sure he's defined that, but I'm not sure that they can have that they elected him because of his values.
Yeah. Well, let's just take the evangelical voting bloc in America, if you can put it that way. It is not a monolith, and there was a fierce debate within evangelicalism throughout the campaign as to whether evangelicals should support Trump or not. And so it was not at all monolithic. But, however, clearly a lot of evangelicals went for Mr. Trump, and my own anecdotal experience in talking to folks, it often came down to who he was going to appoint to the Supreme Court. And I think that was a large issue in this election, driver for lots of people. It came down to, but he will appoint somebody that we agree with to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is going to have a longer legacy than he might. So we will see, you know, who he appoints. I would imagine he will appoint somebody that would be consistent with what evangelicals and other social conservatives have desired to be as a replacement to Justice Scalia.
On issues like right to abortion, right. Same-sex marriage rights, that sort of thing.
Right.
All right, that's Bill McKenzie. He is editorial director for the George W. Bush Institute. Also with us in the studio in San Antonio is O. Ricardo Pimentel, who is columnist for the San Antonio Express News. We're taking part today, all of us, in NPR's A Nation Engaged project, asking Texans what they would like the incoming president to know about this state. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can email think@kera.org, find us on Twitter at @KERAThink, or just go ahead and call 1-800-9
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My two guests in studio this hour are William McKenzie, who's editorial director for the George W. Bush Institute and editor of its journal, The Catalyst. O. Ricardo Pimentel is a columnist for the San Antonio Express News. All of us listening and speaking today are taking part in NPR's A Nation Engaged project, talking specifically about what Texans want the incoming president, Donald J. Trump, to understand about this state. You can join the conversation at 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Texas gave all 38 of its electoral votes to President-elect Trump, but he came in a fairly distant second to Senator Ted Cruz in the Republican primary. Given his long memory for what he perceives to be slights, Ricardo, we'll start with you. Is there any reason to be concerned that the president-elect might look less favorably on Texas than on a state whose Republicans, at least, were firmly in support of his campaign from the start?
No, I think what's going to count is what happened in November, mm-hmm. and we can see how this will play out and how the relationship between Senator Cruz and President Trump plays out. If it's kiss and make up and making nice, then I don't think he'll hold that kind of grudge, because ultimately he knew he won the state.
That seems like a tough relationship to repair, though, between Cruz and Trump.
It'll be hard. At first, Cruz refused to endorse him, and then came around. So maybe pragmatism will dictate what comes next.
Like many candidates, he came here and had fundraisers. So, Texas certainly is a a financial base for Republicans. So let me shift it off to politics a second. There will be an element of Texas that I think that President Trump would like and identify with, that I think Texas is actually a mirror image of New York City. It's a place that is filled with big characters. You know, you think about it in our past, people more recently like Ross Perot or Boone Pickens or Ann Richards, you know, people who are big, larger-than-life figures and characters. Same in New York City. One of which would be Donald Trump, you could argue. You know, we're a state with great wealth and great poverty. We're a state with a lot of diversity. We're a state with a lot of big cities. And so there are really some similarities, despite what, you know, people wouldn't think about them, about these two places. But there's a lot of similarities between Texas and New York. So I think, you know, I could see Donald Trump finding things in Texas that he would find common or similar to being a New Yorker.
Your point is well taken. What makes me laugh is that both Texans and New Yorkers would probably bristle at the characterization
no
that they have anything
no
in
question.
Common.
Let's
at least he didn't say we're like California.
Those are fighting words. Let's go back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. We have Bonnie calling from Spring. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Okay, women and children fleeing gangs from south of our border because of our lax gun laws. I'd like you to comment on that. And companies who advertise employment saying, if you can get here, we'll give you a job. Why are they not being held accountable? And why is no one talking about cross-check?
Thank you very much for your call. Is the president-elect, has he indicated that there may be some changes that need to be made in our gun laws to the extent that U.S. arms are finding their way to Central America?
Well, during the campaign, he was a big Second Amendment fan. It was one of his pillars. So I don't imagine we're going to see a lot of regulation from President Trump. I could be wrong, but if his policies match his rhetoric, I don't think so. And about the Central Americans fleeing their own countries, to a previous caller's point about the wall and Central Americans and others coming across, the Central Americans are coming and giving themselves up at the border. That's not something a wall is going to stop.
Right. Well, I agree. Let me cite another example. I interviewed a young entrepreneur in downtown Dallas who his company designs software, and they do it both. They have like 10 employees in downtown Dallas. He is a young Mexican entrepreneur, and they employ about 60 people outside of Monterrey. And they go back and forth all the time. And they go back and forth literally, but they also go back and forth, you know, electronically. And this is something that is seamless. And they're making apps and all sorts of software things that I may not understand, and then selling them here in the U.S. And this stuff just goes on all the time.
All right.
In a good way.
All right. Back to the phones. We have Patricia calling from Austin. Hi, Patricia.
Hello. I wanted to say that, you know, I've lived in Texas all my life. I was born and raised here, and we love the citizens of our state, and a great majority of our people are mixed races, Mexican, Latinos, blacks, whites, and we all want to just get along, and we don't want him insulting people. We just want to see peace, and we all want to just get along.
Thank you so much for your call.
So I think
that's something I would subscribe to. My parents were undocumented immigrants, and a previous caller talked about her experiences with undocumented immigrants and how it sort of built familiarity and knowledge, tore down walls. It didn't build them up, and that's something Texas has always had going for it, despite some of the rhetoric from some of our top leaders in the state about border security and sanctuary cities. There is a rich tradition here of getting along, even if we've had in our history some tensions. But this is a rich Texas tradition that I think should continue.
Energy is a vast and important economic sector in the state. Bill, what do you think played into Mr. Trump's choice of former Texas Governor Rick Perry, given that Governor Perry is famously on record as wishing to abolish the very department that he'll now be running? What does that say about Mr. Trump's view of Perry, of Trump, of the Energy Department?
Well, I would assume it has something to say with about Rick Perry's support of the energy industry over time, which, you know, to be honest, in Texas, have been a real economic driver. You know, there's a big debate over fracking, but fracking has also been created an economic revolution, and it's kind of slowed down in North Texas recently, but it's getting ready to pick up again in other parts of the state. And, you know, we've grown jobs because of it. So I think that I would assume that played a role in it. NPR had a piece on Rick Perry this morning talking about his emphasis on renewable fuels. You know, to what extent that played in Donald Trump's thinking, I don't know. But there's kind of a twofer there with Rick Perry. He's been both the champion of fossil fuels, but also of renewable fuels. So hopefully we'll get progress on these fronts. But as we know, the Energy Department largely deals with nuclear issues, and to what extent that entered into Donald Trump's thinking about picking Rick Perry, I don't know. I think he was, just reading from the newspapers, it looked like he was pretty interested from the beginning of finding a place for Governor Perry to be.
And I would add that Governor Perry said many of the right things at his confirmation hearing. He has acknowledged some human involvement in climate change. He took back his wish to eliminate the Energy Department. He said with knowledge he learned that it is a vital agency, and it is. So, and he has subscribed to in all of the above energy policy here in Texas. We lead the nation in wind generation, and you know, the sun always shines in Texas, so solar's big. So I don't subscribe to the notion that he was will be a disastrous pick for energy secretary.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. Let's speak with John in Austin. Hi, John.
Hello, this is John.
Hi, John. Go right ahead, please.
Thanks, Chris, for taking my call. A few obvious things. One, the wall. We just did a trip out to Big Bend for Thanksgiving, and if anybody's been to Big Bend, from Lake Amistad to El Paso, it's just not economically feasible to build a wall. And environmental impacts to build the roads and the infrastructure to do the construction is just ridiculous.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. And now we have Susan and Kyle also wanting to talk about the wall. Hi, Susan.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
If I could sit down with Donald Trump, I would like for him to realize the downside, the big, bad impact to building that wall is the harm it is going to cause our wildlife. We've taken so much habitat away from them. A lot of habitat is going to be destroyed just to build it. And then it's going to restrict the animals from going between Texas and Mexico. They don't understand. It's punishing them. It's going to isolate them on the two sides of the wall.
Susan, thank you so much for your call. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We are inviting you to tell us what you would like the President-elect Donald J. Trump to understand about Texas if you could sit down with him today, taking calls from all over the state. Next, we go to George in Houston. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I was just calling to see if I could get someone to comment on if Donald Trump still plans to repeal NAFTA. And when I was younger, I used to travel back and forth between Mexico all the time, and the border towns of Brownsville and McAllen weren't the greatest to pass through in terms of economic prosperity, but nowadays it's really flourished, so you could see the impacts of NAFTA, and I wondered if you guys had any comment on that.
Thanks for your call.
I think the latest on NAFTA is that he wants to renegotiate parts of it, but is not specific about what parts. He was harsh on NAFTA during the campaign, but I think it's we're just going to have to wait and see. I know I hate saying it again, but we're going to have to wait and see.
Well, to beat our own drum here, the Bush Institute actually has a paper out on how you can improve NAFTA. So let's hope it's not a repeal of NAFTA, but how do you modernize, strengthen, and improve NAFTA? We've got some border infrastructure issues. I'm not talking about a wall, but how you move goods across the border more efficiently that need to be addressed is one example. And so there are ways that we can modify, strengthen NAFTA, but we need to do it in a way that facilitates the movement of goods and people and capital across these borders, because as we've been talking about, at least in the state of Texas, and I would also argue in many other places, it has had a net positive effect.
The president-elect's approval rating in a number of polls is hovering in the 40s this week. In his defense, he hasn't been inaugurated yet, and it's impossible. You know, we're talking so much about wait and see. It's possible he could get into office and do things that drive those numbers up. In the meantime, how are you each counseling friends who are either conservatives or progressives who maybe share your political outlook or differ from it but are concerned about the next 4 years?
Well, I have friends who voted for Trump. And they're still friends. And I have other friends who did not vote for Trump, and they are filled with dread. And I just tell them that let's judge him on what he does, not on what he has said he will do. Let's judge him on what he does. Let's give him a chance and see if it was all rhetoric, or if he's serious about governance.
I would agree with that. I think all of our presidents who have been popularly elected through electoral college, they deserve a chance to put their ideas into action. It doesn't mean that the other party just backs off and doesn't try to press back. But let's see what happens. And you know, what is going to happen tomorrow is, you know, a fine American tradition to have this swearing in of a new president, and the office of the presidency, the institutions that that we're going to be seeing on display go beyond Donald Trump. They go beyond any person who occupies that office. So, you know, we give it respect, and we see, you know, what we can make work in a new administration.
William McKenzie is editorial director for the George W. Bush Institute and editor of its journal, The Catalyst. O. Ricardo Pimentel is a columnist for the San Antonio Express News. Our conversation about what Texans want the new president to know about us and our state is part of NPR's A Nation Engaged project. Gentlemen, it's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you very much, both of you, for taking time for us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is our technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle is at KERA Think. My personal Twitter handle is at Chris Boyd Think. You can subscribe to our podcast and find out about upcoming shows at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.